Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Gina and Rosa on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, the OTP of the sitcom world right now.
They are the OTP of the sitcom world right now?
I feel like it. I feel like everybody, you know, when Chelsea Peretti was full-time on the show, everybody was like, yeah, her and Rosa, like, it makes all the fucking sense in the world. Even the actresses were like, yeah. And Chelsea, like, wrote, like, a fake script where they, like, got together or whatever for Brooklyn Nine-Nine and, like, put it on Twitter. It was pretty funny.
I'm really into Gina being literally queer, and I ship them two together just because I think that would be fucking hilarious.
I think it would be perfect. What up, cabrona?
What's poppin', chingona? What's goody?
Not much. It's been a bit of a wild week. As my friends and I have put it, like, one of the worst weeks of 2019 for us, for the most part.
Yeah, it's been hectic for you, like, but you got this. You just got, like, shitty news, but you're gonna get there.
Yeah, funnily enough, and I'll talk about this a little bit later, like, watching Get Out, spoiler alert, we're talking about Get Out today.
Spoiler alert.
Watching it, there was a certain part of it that reminded me a lot of a conversation I had with somebody this week, and I was like relating to it a little too hard, and I was just like angry again.
So, oh shit,
I'll talk about it a little later.
Yeah, and you don't want to have a conversation like they've had in Get Out, so I'm really interested. I'm really interested in what happened, but anyways, yeah, dude, I'm finally moved out and have a couch.
You're living the fucking dream. I'm literally so jealous. I was just talking to somebody about how much I would just love to have my own place right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because you're a roommate. Dude, yeah.
We don't have
to. At least my
that.
Roommate's nice to me.
Yeah, your roommate really fucking likes you.
Oh, God. But yeah. Oh, dude. Like, I have a couch and a coffee table and a TV. Like, here, look.
Those are the three things that I need in my
life. Well,
look,
it's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy right now.
No, but, no. Yeah. No, this looks like heaven to me. Look, coffee table. You know, I love coffee. A couch and a TV. I can't think of anything else that I need in my life.
These are facts.
Yeah.
So, oh, dude. And then I don't know. I haven't, like, been hiding. Like, I haven't been leaving my place just because I'm like, well, you know, this costs a lot of money. So I'm trying to be, like, really, like, good about, like, not leaving the house unless, like, I cannot spend any money. And it's so difficult because I'm just like, drinks cost money. Parking costs money. And, like, a bitch don't got money for parking or for drinks. Like, I can go somewhere to hang out with you for free. Like, you can come to my house for free, but it ain't going no.
Yeah, it's quite a money saver to have your own place because you can just have your friends over and you can just buy beer at the store instead of outside somewhere, you know. So
yeah,
it's just the best. I miss it so much. I miss it.
Yeah,
but that's good. But, I mean, whatever, like, we're adulting, all that.
Oh, dude, I went to the Selena 214 event.
Yeah, this is probably to all of you. You're like, that happened forever ago. Shut the fuck up. We haven't even, like, gone to Klexicon yet, so this is a little while back for some
this
of you.
Is pre-Vegas. This is us us going to Vegas in a couple days.
You're going to see me in 5 days. Are you ready for that?
Yeah, I am. Are you ready? Are you ready?
No.
Me neither. I haven't had time to freak out. I've been so busy, I haven't had time to just be like, oh my God, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. But I'm going to just sit down on Monday and try to freak out all week so that I can sleep, because I never sleep before flights or before we do anything. I get, like, zero sleep, and I don't want to be dead afterwards. So.
Don't do that this time. Like, we have to be active. Like, the good thing, and I was talking to this with some of our friends from Functional that are going to be there this weekend. The good thing is that Vegas pumps their buildings full of this oxygen that will just keep you alive. It's freaking weird.
Yes. Yeah. And it's, like, perfumed oxygen too. It, like, smells amazing. You're like, what kind of air? I can't even smell the cigarettes that smoke everywhere. You know, you're like, just like,
the oxygen,
it smells great.
Like, it's actually wild. Like, I, you'll run on like 3 hours of sleep and a half a coffee for like 3 days. It's amazing. And I can't wait.
Then we're good, because it's not that like I can't sleep, it's just I have like anxiety, so that like if I'm anticipating something, regardless if I'm calm or not, I can't sleep. Like, it's just not gonna happen. So
I'm excited to like, you know, reorient myself to the state of media, because there's a lot of great panels on trans representation, Asian representation, like everything that you can think of, Latinx representation, even we can hear from other voices other than ourselves. So
yeah, I'm stoked. Yeah, that's really exciting. Yeah, I really, it's my first year, so I don't even know what to expect, so I'm just kind of like, it's all new to me, and I'm like, cool, it's my first year at KlexCon and I get to be like speaking on a panel basically, so it's pretty cool. So I'm excited
for sure.
Yeah, what are we talking about today, Maite?
We're talking about one of my favorite things ever, which is horror film. I love horror film. I have since the beginning of time. So I was really excited to do this episode for that reason. Yeah.
Yeah. And then so we're getting to speak about Get Out and Us. This is our Jordan Peele-centered episode.
Yes. Jordan Peele's, you know, he really took a lot of people by surprise. I'm including myself in that, because I always saw him as a comedian. You know, he's like this comedic, smart guy. And then he's just like, let me terrify you. And I was
the thing about like comedians is they always end up being the best like dramatic people, or like the best like actors, because like think about it, like Jamie Foxx has an Oscar, I think Robin Williams went to like dramatics, like Jim Carrey went to like dramatic movies. Like everyone who's ever been a comedian has transitioned well into a different form of media that actually involves them either like being very good writers, being very good actors, like anything they do when they move from comedy into some other genre, they do extremely well.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
if they move to that genre. If they don't, then
yeah, Jim Carrey was kind of backwards. Jim Carrey did like that one serious movie and then was like, I'm never doing a serious movie ever fucking again.
No, he's doing something called Kidding on like I think Showtime right now, and they said it's actually supposed to be about like depression or something, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, Litty. I mean, comedy and depression kind of go hand in hand.
Right, comedy and like anxiety, those things are like, I feel like those things are hand in hand.
It's no surprise that that comedians are good at drama, because literally comedy is just the shock factor. Like that's it. Like you shock somebody in a certain way, that's how you get them to laugh. That's all you have to do is shock them.
And so he transitioned extremely well into horror. And
he shocked us with horror, so there's that.
Yeah, and like I had like different I have like a lot of misconceptions going into horror because it's not my favorite genre. And then, I don't know, something happened. Something changed. And shout out to you, Maite. You get me to like revisit things, and I then change my mind on them. This is the second time.
Because like you said some words that I disagreed with. I was low-key like, you know, I'm going to throw my computer away after I saw these words.
I was like, no. No, I mean, and I stood in that moment, and now I'm like standing in something different, but we'll get to that, and I'll tell you how I changed my heart and my mind. So
cool.
Let's get into it.
So should we go chronological? Should we go Get Out first?
I think we should do Get Out first, yeah.
Cool. And then after that, guys, we'll talk about
us.
U.S. all right. So Get Out, it came out in 2017. It was so interesting to see Daniel, because I've seen, you know, we see Daniel Kaluuya and a couple of other things, and just 3-4 years ago when this was filmed, he looks so much younger. But just, he's just an amazing actor. It's like no surprise that he's just so successful now. So
yeah, dude.
Yeah, I mean, this movie, look, Get Out is an anomaly. Ugh. It took $4.5 million to produce, which seems like a lot. It's not. It's not a lot at all.
It's not. It's nothing.
Made $30 million on its opening weekend. And I mean, do you know the numbers for Us by chance?
I do not, because they're still going, because it's still in theaters. I don't want to give it like a final.
Oh, no. I'm talking about open weekend. So opening weekend, it made 70,000. $70 million. And it wasn't produced for that much either. I think it was produced for like $20 million or something. So significantly more than Get Out.
I mean,
but still very little in comparison.
He could afford to have Lupita as the lead. So yeah, he needed that budget.
Right. But, you know, in comparison still to Get Out, or sorry, not to Get Out, in comparison to other big pictures, it was fairly low budget.
Pretty low. It's not like Avengers. Like, I don't even know what their fucking budget is.
You don't
even
want
insane.
To know what their budget
is. That's a ridiculous amount of money.
But let's just say that, to put it simply, like, these movies have been, like, the most profitable fucking movies. Like, they have made bank, dude.
It grossed $225 million worldwide.
So far? Oh, Get Out. Oh, yeah. Get Out. Okay,
totally. Get Out. Yeah.
Totally. For a $4 million movie.
Yeah, holy, I bet fucking shit. Fucking studios love him.
I think studios are like shaking in their fucking boots, you know?
They're like, we'll give you whatever money, do whatever you want. The way you fucking multiplied that $4.5 million, go for it. And not just that, Get Out was nominated for like 4 different Oscars, best film, best original screenplay.
And horror films even being nominated for Oscars is so rare. Like, that happen.
That shit doesn't happen since like the 70s, like Rosemary's Baby, maybe something like that. I think
That was not really critically acclaimed until like later, you know. Really? Like, with a lot of horror, they're like, oh, this is nothing, and then later on you see the social implications, because horror is just so social. Like, it's about humanity.
Yeah, it really is. And I, you know, well, the first time I watched Get Out, this is where I go, is that the first time I watched Get Out, I wasn't impressed. I was like, but again, I watched this months after it was hyped. You know, like, everyone was telling me, you have to watch Get Out. And then they told me the plot without me asking.
So you didn't watch, oh, that's shitty. That's so shitty.
Yeah.
You didn't watch it in theaters, is what you're saying.
I didn't watch it in theaters. Oof. People just told me what it was. And I was like, fucking hate you.
Fuck those
They gave
people.
Me spoilers.
I'm sorry.
So I went in knowing what the fuck it was. And then I was like, this is what y'all were hype about, you know? I was like, get out of here. I bought this movie. That's how much I believe the hype.
Yeah.
But watching again, because we're doing this episode, I completely changed my mind. Like, I wasn't only just impressed by, like, the story and the plot itself and how original it was. I was impressed by the acting. I was impressed by how much foreshadowing and how many things he had in place. Everything made sense. Every character made sense. The way the characters developed made sense. And I stand by this. I still love Lil Rel's character. Like,
yeah.
He's my favorite character.
For God's sakes. We will talk about that.
We'll keep going. Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess we can try to start chronologically on this movie. It's not spoiler for this is not gonna be a spoiler free review.
Oh no, it's been out, guys, since 2017.
Yeah, and us probably won't be. Actually, it definitely won't be spoiler free. So that's a heads up to you guys. Jordan Peele's 2 horror films will be covered today, not spoiler free.
Mm-hmm. So if you haven't seen it, go watch it. Come back, or if you like spoilers, stay.
Yeah, or if you, yeah, I assume that most people have seen it by now, like, just statistically, I don't know.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah,
right. So Get Out, it actually only has a couple of things in common with Us. They're both horror films that are starring Black people who are kind of successful. They both have like this almost sci-fi element to them. And they, in their own way, they're both body snatcher horror films in their own weird way. But that kind of is the extent of what they have in common, other than this director and his style, right? So there's that.
I found like a running theme in it, but I think it's more like broad versus I think you're kind of getting those little points together.
Right. Like no more like in specific ways. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of want to talk about how from the beginning I noticed that Rose is Chris's girlfriend, his white girlfriend. Chris is this black guy. He's a photographer. He's the main character played by Daniel Kaluuya. So Rose from the beginning, she's in control, right? Like she's the one that's literally driving this car, right? And that's kind of unusual to see. Usually it's, fucking heteronormativity. The man always drives, but she's driving the car. When they're driving, he pulls out a cigarette. She grabs it and throws it out the window. Like, she's asserting, like, her control, like, all the way throughout this movie. And even when, like, they end up hitting this deer and get pulled over by a cop, she's, like, asserting her privilege when that cop is there. She's very much, like, you know, showing that she has this power, you know, as a white woman. And
that's super real to, like, I feel maybe, like, the subtleties of that weren't lost on, like, the black or POC community, that, like, even in that dynamic, the white person still holds all of the power and the control. So I think, like, that wasn't lost on the POCs out here. Like, we saw that immediately. It was like, oh, that's normal.
Right. But, like, to a lot of the audiences, it played off as, like, the act of an ally. That specific moment with the cop and even Chris's character is like, wow, that was hot or whatever the fuck. Mm-hmm. But, like, really, she's just, like, the perfect representation of, like, allies who are all, like, tweeting shit and talking about shit. But, like, when it comes to their families, like, they're up to some shady shit and they just let it happen, you know? So that's what that, I saw that in her.
That real anxiety, that fear that POC have when they're like, if you date a white woman, this is probably what's going to happen. She's still going to be that white privilegey person.
Right, right. Like, Rose in general as a character, like, skipping forward a little bit, like, she's fucking terrifying, right? Like, she, like, the scene where Chris is just, like, pleading with her, like, Rose, the keys, like, that was haunting. It was fucking haunting. Like, she says, like, you know, I can't give you the keys, right, babe? She's basically saying, I can't give you the power. Like, it's mine. Like, I have the power. I'm not going to give it to you.
Like, I'm the white woman. I hold the privilege. I'm not giving that to you. And you're exactly. Like, oh, word.
Uh-huh. And then her phone call to Rod later in the movie is also fucking creepy. She's just sitting in the dark. She's wearing all white. She's, like, showing no emotions. And then, like, finally... This is the funny part to me, like, this conversation about what the proper way to eat your cereal,
oh god,
is like, she has a glass of milk with a straw, and it's like a black straw and a white glass of milk, and she has a bowl of dry cereal and she's eating them piece by piece and drinking out of the milk. Like, what kind of psycho shit is that? That's not how you fucking eat cereal.
Yeah, because, like, I get it if, like, you eat cereal dry. Like, if you have, like, you know, if you're lactose and you just enjoy cereal. Yes, you do eat cereal dry. Like, when people are like, who does that?
Or soy milk or almond milk or something.
Like, sometimes you don't even do that. But I was like, wait a minute. But she has, like, a cup of milk. Like, that's fucking weird.
To me, like, I might be wrong about this, but there's nothing more white than just drinking milk by itself. I think that's so weird.
It's fucking, well, you know, unless you live on a farm, like, my dad grew up in a rancho, and so he likes milk by itself, but that's because he's used to real milk. So,
oh really, that's creepy. I don't know. Yeah. I don't like cow's milk.
He just likes milk. Yeah, I don't
know. So back to, I guess, more general conversation around Get Out for us here. It was kind of like the first time that the masses, like, in a movie saw represented, like, this new wave of racism, right? Like, the old shit, you see it all the time, like movies about the KKK and neo-Nazis and shit, but this movie was very much about, like, passive aggressiveness. It's about, like, fetishization of black bodies. It's tokenism, and it's white people who think that voting for Obama made them good people. And
yeah, it was like the perfect representation of, like, black anxiety in, like, 2017, you know, like when he was in that little get together they had where literally all the white people were just asking the most. And for us, like, we still don't know what's happening, right? But we, at the same time, we don't actually even think that conversation that they're having is weird. Like, how they're summing up his, like, physicality, his sexual prowess, like, how good he is as golf, like, his, like, talents and his abilities. And, like, the thing is, like, I like that Jordan Peele wrote it that way, that we didn't even think that was weird. We were just like, that's normal. Like, that's a regular ass conversation. And I like how we turn something that we see as, like, so normal, but it's actually really, really fucked up, and that we shouldn't see it as normal, and they're just trying to snatch our bodies. Like,
yeah. So that's where, like, I don't know if you remember the promotion for this movie, but it's always Daniel staring into the camera, and the focus is his eyes. Mm-hmm. And in the movie, it's no coincidence, he's a photographer, and they talk a lot about seeing through his eyes, because you're forced to see through his eyes, literally, at the interactions that he has to deal with, and the way that white people talk, you know, like, alleged, you know, liberal white people talk. So it's so important that he did it that way. Like, his eyes are so important.
And that's kind of what I see as, like, a running theme, is, like, eyes with Jordan Peele, and, like, his, like, foreshadowing. He's letting you know that people are kind of off balance, and it's very subtle, that you feel it as wrong, you feel it as uncomfortable, but in that moment you cannot really make out what he's going to do with that weirdness, that oddness, that, you know, that Allison Williams character eating cereal and milk separately, where the way that they're talking about his eyes, like you said. And that's what that one white guy wanted, was his eyes. He's like, I want your eyes. And it's like,
yeah,
it's like every living anxiety of a black person is, like, you both fear white people, but the white people who like you, you fear just as much, because you feel as if they're trying to use you, they're trying to take from you. Even they aren't allies, even they are trying to take, like, it's so real, like culture vultures, like everything, like white people just continue to take from the culture. And I feel like that's something like so real and so unheard of in horror, is that like black people got to be centered, black people had their fears, like, you know, blown up on a screen and said, you know, your fears are valid, you know. And that's so rare, and like no one's done that. And I saw that this time, which I didn't see the first time. I was just like, oh, whatever, this is like a what's his name, this is like fucking comedian's name, he's problematic as fuck too, and I can't remember his name right now, god. You know what I'm talking about? Dave Chappelle.
I feel like this, oh, okay,
I felt like a Dave Chappelle skit come to life. Like I felt like I felt like but like we were talking about, you know, comedy and horror both deal with anxiety in a different way. Like Dave Chappelle does it to shock you, but also make you laugh. So what I was seeing was the similarities between comedy, which Lil Rel was like actively like the voice of his comedy throughout the movie. Like he was saying like, hey, bro, you don't do this. Like I felt like he still snuck in his comedy act with Lil Rel, and then he had his horror, you know.
There's plenty of parts of it that were humorous,
like, super hilarious.
And circling back to the thing with the house guest, like he you know, like you said, like the first round most people are like, of course these people are asking him about his body and mentioning Tiger Woods and all this other shit, like of course they fucking are, it's so passive aggressive. And then upon rewatch you're like, oh, they, you know, they literally want to take his body, like this shit's fucking wild, they want to buy his body, like make him the sex slave that
Lil Rel
Rod keeps talking about. Yeah, like Rod's character. This shit is real. And it's like, I don't know, it's they even throw in the Asian guy.
Oh, he's like, god, the Asian guy, that's like Asian dude
who's like, do you find that being African-American is advantageous or disadvantageous in the modern world?
And then all the white people turn to him, they're like, oh, this is a hard one.
This is, yeah, they're like, this is a difficult question, like what? No, it's, first of all, no, it's fucking not. And then second of all, like that's where you get the iconic line, because Chris is like, tells Andre, and Andre is like one of the only black people there that day. I think he might be the only other one other than the caretakers. And he's like, Chris, why don't, Andre, why don't you take this question? And Andre's like, oh, I think my experience as a black person has been wonderful, or whatever. Like, okay, oh, fuck God. Off. Like, this is not right. Like, and then he literally, screams at Chris after he takes that picture. He's like, get out, like get the fuck out. So that shit was wild, dude. Like all those interactions just building up to that moment.
Shout out to the Keith Stanfield for being Andre. Like that was,
yeah,
he opened the whole movie, and you're like, yeah, he's literally thinking everything we're thinking. And then the way the American judicial system has been treating black men, and how black men have been, you know, gunned down just for walking down in neighborhoods. Like people, POC can't even walk down a street without being fucked with. So,
and he does, like at the beginning of the movie, like you remember what he does, he's like, fuck this shit, I'm not doing this tonight, I'm turning around. Like he does everything, like, you know,
you're supposed to do,
right? Yeah, he's like, nope, I'm not doing this today. And then still, like, it doesn't matter because the system's set up against him.
Yep. And that's what I saw as the running connecting theme is you know, the actions of the wealthy and versus the actions of the oppressed. And like, I feel like that was his running theme without him realizing it. Like, you know, all of these things are done you know, the wealthy, the people in power, the people in control versus
the privileged,
those, the privileged, right? Versus the haves and the haves nots,
the marginalized,
like, the marginalized, yeah, and the non-marginalized, and what their power does to people. And so I saw that as a running theme that I don't even think he thought or he thinks that he's actively doing, but I think because he's a black man in America, he understands it just innately in his work. It's going to show, and that's what I see as the connecting theme between both of them, is that, you know,
classism. Or the privilege, right?
Privilege.
Yeah. And to, I guess, kind of go back a little bit and talk about that, like the marginalized, the symbolism in this, because that's what Jordan does, right? He has like a symbol that represents it. And this one, in this case, it's the deer. So when they're driving to see her parents, to see Rose's parents, they hit a deer. And it's a very shocking thing. They stop the car, and Chris, he's just compelled to go look at this dying deer that got hit on the side of the road. Like a lot of, like, this shit happens a lot, especially if you live in the South, you know that this happens a lot.
Yeah, San Antonio.
It's a very common thing. Oh, I was thinking, like, Alabama and shit.
Texas, but, girl.
Yeah, so he, like, you know, that moment is, like, like visually so important, because it's like going, it's Daniel's eyes and then it's the deer's eyes, and you're like, what's going on here, right? And then it doesn't like fully sink in that the deer are meant to be like a metaphor for black people, because until they're talking to the dad and the dad is like, oh yeah, like in my opinion they gotta go, like there's way too many of them, they're taking over, like
taking up space,
take out as many deer as you can or whatever the fuck.
And you're like, whoa, black people.
You're like, oh that's what we're doing here. And they're even more so, like he takes Chris on this little tour around the house and he has like a male deer, which is a, like they call them bucks, he has like the taxidermied one up on the wall in one of the rooms, and it's like meant to symbolize like I conquered this beast, you know. And it's very like passive aggressive but also very obvious.
On like rewatch symbols. Like when what I noticed about the deer scene when I watched it again is that I get why he was so affected by the deer. It wasn't just like a metaphor for black people, it also was like a metaphor for his mother, because she got right. killed in a hit and run, and you don't know that till later on. So in the beginning, yeah. you're just kind of like, why is he like really paying attention
that's
to this deer?
That's why he wants to go see the deer. Yeah, because he's like, he wants to see if it's alive, because he fucked up when he was a kid and didn't do that with his mom.
Yeah, so he's kind of like relieving his trauma at the very beginning of the movie, and I thought that was really smart and interesting to do, because like on rewatch, you're like, oh shit, that's his mom. And he even feels that when the father, played by Bradley Whitford, I don't know, that white man, Bradley Whitford, he, even when he was talking about it, like his visceral reaction to him saying that was like, what the fuck? Like,
right.
bro, are you talking about me? Like, he's like, oh, fuck that.
Yeah,
like, you definitely. Can even tell that he's not talking just about tear, and he feels it and he knows it. Like, everything that's happening, he feels it, he's internalizing, but he's ignoring all of those ideas, all those thoughts he's feeling.
Keeping calm. That's yeah. like the thing, is that like he's taking it all in stride.
Yeah, he's not listening purpose. To his like instinct telling him, get the fuck out of there. Like, this doesn't make any sense. Like,
or I think he's like, it's meant to represent how like, you know, black people have to put up with this bullshit all the fucking time, and they're like, for their own safety, they're smart enough to be like, I'm not gonna attack this right now because these people are in power and I'm not in a place where I can fight it. So that, I think that's what I read into it.
Yeah.
And then continue on the deer and then the hunters. So like obviously the white people are the hunters. It also reminded me of how the brother, which we don't find this out until later, but the brother is the one that takes Andre off of the street. He's just walking on the street and he like grabs him, takes him and tortures him, right? So that's another part of it. And then the final thing that I noticed with the deer thing is that literally Rose comes out and like her like proper white clothing with a shotgun ready to hunt him down like a fucking deer,
mm-hmm.
like with like no hesitation, like her whole family just died and she's just like, I don't care, I'm gonna go hunt him down.
Yeah, that's her main concern, like that shit's on fire, right. She's like, I don't care, I'm gonna go hunting, I'm gonna go kill, that's what I'm doing.
There is one more.
Which one?
When Chris kills the dad with the antlers of the deer.
Word.
So, yeah.
Oh my god, like there's just so many things in this movie.
Yeah, the deer is like just like the rabbits in Us, this is the deer, you know. So do you want to talk a little bit about the caretakers, the Walter and Georgina?
Yeah, actually I do, thank you. Like I did have something to say about that. So an interesting thing that like kind of set me off when I watched it again was that like he didn't call them like his workers, or like he didn't have like a good word, he said servants. He said black yeah. servants, and that really, like, it's a trigger
that's
for
not,
me.
Yeah, that's not, like,
what, that's not what
people
you call
them
work.
These days.
No, right. Like, that's such an old, you know, antiquated, like,
even maid, like, even maid is, like, a word that
I hate,
like, people,
the word maid, yes.
They don't dude. Even, like, they try to avoid that word, too.
It's housekeeper, back when, yeah.
Or housekeeper, or the babysitter, that's what they used to call my mom, is the babysitter, even though she's cleaning your fucking house.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's, you know, and so that set me off, that was like a, whoa, like, unless you know, you don't know, like, and I knew, so I was like, oh, no, that's a trigger word for me, like, you don't say servant, like, and then they said black servant, they, like, made it a point to say, this is, and I was like, shout out to Jordan Peele, like he's giving us hints this whole time, like, and it made me uncomfortable when I watched it, and I was like, word, like this is supposed to make us uncomfortable, like he's leaving all these hints around. And like Georgina's character is so interesting, and I think the whole concept of like body snatching is interesting, because although they inhabit their body, the soul of the human is still there. So like you know, they might switch their brains, right? Is that what they were doing?
So kind of backwards, brains? Actually. So the black person, like, you know, they can control their body, their motor functions, but the consciousness is the white person's.
Yes, and yet still at the same time, the soul of the black person is still there in the sunken place. Like, there's still...
Yeah, there's, like, there's still... It's still kind of in there, right?
Still
it's
there.
Like, but it only comes and it out comes when out. There's a flash of light.
Mm-hmm. Because I think that's what, like, wakes them up, or, like, it's a reflection. I don't know. I didn't remember the specifics of that, but mm-hmm. I thought that was so interesting that, like, he's not just saying anything about, like, body snatching. He's talking about, you know, about black souls. Like, you can take away the body, but the soul is still there. And I thought that was, like... Whoa, that's really, really interesting as a concept, you know? Like, he's just saying so much more than he ever meant to say.
Yeah, the notable thing to me about Walter and Georgina, on Walter's side, it's the first interaction that him and Chris have by themselves.
Oh, that's
where
creepy.
Chris kind of goes up to him and he's like, you know, he's code switched. He's like, hey, what's up, man? Like, you know, casual and stuff. But Walter, like, doesn't code switch. He's like, you know, and... it's a weird ass interaction. So he goes up and talks to Rose about it, and he's like, he says a very important line. He tells Rose, it's not what he says, it's how he says it. And that's where, you know, if you don't know this when you first watch it, but upon rewatch you're like, oh well, yeah, because it's an old racist white man like that's saying these things and talking to him in a certain way.
And yeah, I mean, we all saw it, you know, we all were like, well, me, when I saw it the first time, I was like, why are these people scared to code switch? Like, what's going on? Do they have cameras? Yeah. Are they watching? Like, who, they should, that's how scared the black people are in this movie, that they're like, they're scared into not code switching. So I read that immediately and I was like, okay, word, what's happening here? Mm-hmm. This is creepy. Like,
fear is a big fear thing in this movie.
Yeah, but, you know, fear of white people is
and then
real.
Georgina, all I have to say about Georgina, the woman is played by Betty Gabriel, is a fucking genius. Her fucking acting was just on point. Like, who,
you really did think a little white lady was stuck in
looks,
there
looks and like you just like, you see her pain a lot too, like her pain really goes through. I just thought she was an excellent actress, just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and then that whole conversation where she was talking to him, but at the same time you felt like Georgina's like, the person stuck in her was like speaking, and she was like, no, don't, no, no, no. And I was like,
she's like, no.
Yeah. And so, like, the white lady's talking to her like, no, this is not happening right now, bitch. You are not coming out. You're not saying shit, ho. But you can see the spirit. Like, that's crazy good acting. Like,
she's so good. I think she's totally, like, underrated in this movie.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
She was one of the best performances to me, because I was just like, what the fuck? Like, there are two people in this woman right now. Like, acting is on point.
right. And then you touched on this a little bit already, but there's the guy who's blind and who is obviously a reference to, like, the people who are all like, oh, I don't see color, I see people. So, like, that was fucking genius. Yeah, it's like, dude, he's the only one that at first you're thinking is safe. You're like, he's not a total creep, like this guy's fine, this guy can be trusted, but he's still the enemy. Like, the people who go around saying like, oh, I don't see color. I'm not racist, I don't like actively do things that are hurtful to black people, I'm like, yeah, but you don't do anything to help, so really you're complicit. You're
still trying to body snatch, so are you
right
different?
At the end, you're the fucking enemy. Like, I you're still selfish, and I think in this case it's more about people who are just selfish and they only care about themselves, so it's less about them being racist and more about them being selfish.
Not just that, like them using, like, you know, oh, I don't see race, but like, I'm still not going to let you into any positions, or like, my white supremacy still matters more than
him having his eyes, like, it still matters more than anything else, exactly, than
anyone else's humanity. So word, this whole movie, like, watching it again, like, I changed my mind. I was like, word, okay, I get what everybody's saying now, because that first time I was like, I already know what's gonna happen, I'm not like surprised at anything. And
but there's levels to it, so even if somebody many. Like spoils this shit for you, like, you're still not gonna get everything right. Like, even I guess building on that, you know, are seeing this blind guy as still another part of, like, the fucking white supremacy that black people have to face every day. Like, there's also the fact that they feel the need to explain everything. This is where this comes in, what I was talking about earlier, that something I experienced earlier this week.
Mm-hmm. Yes, let me hear.
They feel the need to show Daniel, like, Chris, or the video of the oldest Armitage, that's their last name, the grandfather before his body died, basically him explaining what transplantation is, and like literally the word is plantation is in it, so I'm like, okay, wow. Okay. and then they have him do basically like a FaceTime with the blind guy, where the blind guy explains himself. It's like, why do you need to do that? Why do you have to explain yourself to your victim? Like, and they're in probably the first couple times that I saw this movie, I didn't get it. I was just like, oh, they're explaining it for the audience. But upon this time that I watched it, I'm like, no, they think that they're excused. They think that these excuses and telling their side of the story is like, you know, that it makes it right, it redeems them, it eases their white guilt. And I had that shit happen to me this fucking week where somebody screwed me over, mm-hmm. and they pull me aside, and this is not gonna benefit me. This wasn't gonna benefit me at all. Like, this wasn't to help me, it was to help them.
And ease them, their pulling own me guilt.
Aside and saying, yeah, it's them pulling me aside and basically being like, oh, I'm screwing you over because of this reason. This is why I'm doing it. Like, you know, how can I help? How can I help, you know, put a Band-Aid on the stab wound on your back that I put? You know, like, it's purely for their own pleasure, for their own gain. Like, it's, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, if you're gonna fucking hurt somebody, like, why do you have to stop and be like, I'm doing this for a reason. Like, fuck you. I don't care about your fucking reason.
Yeah, they're just still doing this shit. They're just excusing their own guilt. I think they're just trying to redeem themselves to themselves. And it's like, you don't have to. Fuck you. Like, get the fuck out of here. You know, you don't. You're already doing something bad. Like, live with it. Be it. Breathe it. Inhale. You are not a good person.
Except
your
fucking privilege. Yeah. Except the position that you've taken, that you're taking advantage of, and the people that you're hurting. Like, you don't have to go and fucking stick your finger in the wound just to make yourself feel better. Like, fuck any of you that have ever done that shit, especially to the people that are doing that shit to me. So I've said my piece.
Yes. No, but and that's just to ease their own white guilt. Like, this movie, man, I just it's so good.
And do you want to talk about his so Chris gets hypnotized, right? He's getting hypnotized
under the guise of him stopping smoking, because he's smoking.
Yeah, under the guise of helping him.
Yeah, they're gonna help them. Yeah. Oh, you have a problem. Right, let's help you.
And you know, so he has this habit where he scratches against whatever chair he's on, or like, you know, the handles of it, and that's how he ultimately. It's caused by his fear. So he's this is why fear comes back in. His fear causes him to scratch against the chair. The chair. And later on happens to be a leather chair that is filled with cotton. So I don't think I have to go into why cotton is so important and as a reference, right? Like, we all know what the fuck that means, but that's what saves his life, is his fear. And that's, I think that was a very important message too.
What, to embrace your fear, to let your fear,
that your fear is like there for a reason. It's there for a fucking reason.
Oh, I feel like that's what the movie and I feel like that's why the movie was so important, because like, if you think about like horror, like black people always die first. We know it's a running occurring joke in like all POCs, right. It's like, how quick will the black person die? How quick? I mean, there is no Latinos in the movie unless it's like J-Lo.
Fuck. Drag.
Yeah, the only time we're in a movie is J-Lo, of course. She's our one. But like, you know, it's always the running joke, it's like, when is the black person going to die? And like, at last.
Like, right. Well, yes. That brings us to kind of the very important ending.
Oh,
right?
Lord. Yeah.
So Jordan Peele had two endings in mind, and he filmed two endings. And to respect his wishes, his wish ended up being, I'm going to give them a hopeful ending, or the only type of happy ending that I can give to this story, right? And it ends up being our badass motherfucking Rod, who has been giving these fucking wild ass theories throughout this whole film that are literally exactly what happens. They're like, they're gonna make you a sex slave. Like, yeah, they fucking are.
Yeah.
So like, the whole time his wild ass theories are actually exactly what happens, and he ends up saving him. He ends up being the savior. And in those final moments where like Rose is playing the victim, she sees like the police lights and she's like, oh, great. And Chris is like, oh, fuck.
White privilege. And everybody's, here we go, like, again.
Yeah, everybody's like holding their breath and they're like, fuck. And then it's Rod, and that's amazing. It's like a win. It's such a fucking win, and all that shit. But in the alternate ending, have you seen the alternate ending?
I've not seen the alternate ending. Please tell me.
So, the alternate ending, he, you know how he's choking Rose and he ends up letting up and like not killing her in the original? So he does kill her.
Okay.
By choking her, I believe. Mm-hmm. And the police that show up are actually police and they arrest him. So the rest of the scene is basically Rod going to go visit him in prison. And you know those little like booths where they talk on the phone and mm-hmm. Across the glass or whatever? He's trying to get justice for Chris. Chris, and he's like, tell me again the story. Like, we got to figure this out. We got to get justice for you. And Chris is like, he's lost all hope. He's like, you know what? I stopped this operation. I stopped this transplantation thing. And that's good enough for me. And he's like, settled. And he leaves Rod hanging. And then there's this like brief scene where he's getting up off of the chair, Chris's. And you see through like the mirror that every single booth down that line, like next to him, is just black men. And so it's like a comment on the prison system. And
whoa, thank God we actually, didn't get this that.
Is, yeah.
And, we already had a Bill Street could talk, and I don't think I can. Yeah.
Do it what again.
Yeah.
So the first, this is actually the first time that I see a direct kind of alignment to us mm-hmm. in this alternate scene that didn't actually make it into the final cut. Mm-hmm. But he's walking away, like a guard is leading him away to, you know, his cage, and the walls and the cages and like and the gates, they're all white. So like he's leading them away, like into prison. It looks like a fucking prison, and it's all white, and he's being led away, and he's wearing this orange jumpsuit. And that's when I'm like, fuck. Oh, like this looks just like us. It looks like the underground in Us, with the jumpsuits, with the cage, you know, like that was the first time that I was like fuck, like hold on, what was I thinking? Like it like triggered the fuck out of me. Like it was like this sad excuse of an existence that people who are imprisoned live, and literally the tethered in Us are the exact same, right? Like they're underground, they're locked away in cages, they're living a sad excuse of a like existence, a parallel to what people outside of these cages are living, but it's not the same. So yeah. That was the first time that I was like, Us kind of is, if it had this ending, would be the natural successor to Get Out.
No, I mean, and it leads perfectly into Us, because I feel like Us is doing exactly what you said. And it, like I said, he has a running, reoccurring theme of the oppressed, of the marginalized, of what happens to, you know, the have and the have-nots in society. And I think that's, he's doing it again unintentionally, you know, like it's not like he said himself, this isn't a race movie. I'm like, yeah, it's about class. It's about,
it's about classism,
privilege. Exactly. It's about access. And it's like, word, like that didn't stop. And you know, that's not different from Get Out. That Get Out still has those themes. So I thought that was interesting. Do you want to now lead into Us?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay. Now,
no cafecitos for Us. Done.
Oh yeah. And five pandulces for Get Out.
Sorry, Get Out. Yeah, I said Us. I don't know why.
No, I
still applies, but still.
I know what you meant. And I'm just like, when I did Us, there's like a billion conspiracy theories, and like I don't want to get inundated and all of that. And I just want to read off what they called, what they themselves described Us as. They said it's a family. Yeah, I'm just gonna read it from IMDb, because I was like,
oh, IMDb. Okay.
This is interesting. Like, this is not even a fraction of what this is. It's a family serene beach vacation turns to chaos when their doppelgangers appear and begin to terrorize them. And that's it.
That's a very
vague as fuck. That's not even close.
It's a very horror description. Like horror films are described this way, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's what they do. They're like,
a family takes a vacation.
Some like these girls go on a girls' trip to a cabin in the woods.
Oh
like,
god.
Like that's what horror film.
Two white girls wanted to go swimming with sharks. Let's see what happens. Like what the fuck? Like no, nah, ain't gonna happen. Yeah. But it stars the wonderful Lupita Nyong'o. The Latinos claimer, yes. As well. Winston Duke, Elizabeth Moss, and Tim Heidecker. He's the white dude. Shahadi.
Wait, what did you say his first name is?
Tim?
Tim, okay. They said him. I was like, what?
No. Yeah,
Tim Heidecker. He's like, he's actually amongst the whites, he's very popular because he's like in comedy.
Yeah, amongst the whites. Like, and right. I'd seen him, but I had never really like heard him speak because, you know, in my fashion. Anyways, and then Shahadi plays the daughter. Jason is the name of the son. I forgot his name, and I apologize for that. But Jordan Peele wrote, directed, and produced this movie with his production team called Monkey Paw. And the only reason I'm bringing up Monkey Paw is because I'm going to make a lot of Simpson references, because I feel like he was indirectly influenced. And what is it called? Like, I feel like this is a direct influence of, like, some, like, Simpsons Treehouse of Horror episode. And those are my hot takes for it. They're going to be Simpsons related. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen anybody make that except Twitter, which I completely 1,000% agree. I'm like, yeah, let's go there, Twitter.
I was waiting for the Simpsons, like, recap of it. Like, for days, I was, like, scrolling through that shit. Like, when is that going to come?
Oh, and it's not the only thing. Monkey Paw is...
I was stoked on it.
Dude, Monkey Paw itself is taken from another Simpsons Treehouse of Horror episode where, like, Homer Simpson... I know this is not just the only people that do it, but I feel like everything was a direct relation to it, where Homer finds this Monkey Paw and has to make, like, 3 wishes, and every time the Monkey Paw goes down... Have you seen that episode of The Simpsons?
I think I have. I just don't remember, like, the details.
Yeah, like, Homer finds his monkey paw and makes, like, 3 wishes, and they're all, like, stupid and fucked up. And, like, I feel like that's another Simpsons reference that he's making unintentionally. So I thought that was pretty dope. But, yeah, let's go into the movie. What are the things that you liked and saw in the movie?
So I liked the whole movie. Mm-hmm. I very specifically saw one thing that I ended up actually writing about. By this time, I think this article should be out, so
yes,
I'll, like,
go for it,
tweet about it and all that stuff. We'll link it and stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The title is of my article is "The Classism and Imposter Syndrome in Us." Mm-hmm. And I mean it's pretty obvious, right? Like, Us is, like, a critique on upper and middle classes in the US, and, like, the fear that the lower class could, like, rise up and take what's theirs. And it's literally us, the US, like, when literally they say we are Americans. Like, all of this, I feel like maybe you can't see, some people don't see it in the first, like, see through, but it's there. It's fucking there for you.
It's there. They're Americans. They are. It's not even. I feel like movies that have to spoon feed you. Like, this, I think maybe that's why horror movies sometimes annoy me when they do explanations, because I hate being spoon fed. And this movie, they still spoon fed you, but not as much. So I really was into that.
They didn't spoon feed you, like, half as much as most other films do.
True. And that's why I hate all of those other movies, and that's why I didn't hate Us, and I liked it a lot, actually, because I was like, cool, I had to think. Thank you so much. I appreciate movies where I have to think. And a lot of that comes into you know, and I think the scariest things, like Jordan Peele said, are things that you can't see, things that you don't know. And a lot of this movie is about the unknown, things you can't see, because it's all happening underground. He's taking the whole idea from real life human people that live underground, because I think at the time he was inspired by this documentary on mole people in the bottom of New York that live in the tunnels of New York. And that's a real thing. Like, people really did live down there, and they actually,
wow,
like, and they had, like, running water, and they built their own homes down there. They were living their lives down there. But the thing about that is that they, you know, they weren't weird mole people. They were just people that dropped out of society. You know, some of them had, you know, a lot of them had drug problems or mental problems. And it's really just a sign of, like, how society treats people who are othered. But
they ostracized the fuck out of them.
But the thing about that, though, is there was this really interesting documentary on people that lived underground, is that they actually started, like, welfare programs in the 80s, and got them apartments. They got them like food stipends, apartment stipends. Like, they got them to come up from underground. At least they picked, like, 20 people in this documentary, and they gave them homes, and they gave them access, and they started to kind of reintroduce them to back to society, which I thought was actually cool. And I don't know if a lot of people have seen that documentary. I gotta find it. I found it on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm like, you gotta find it, because I want to watch that shit.
Yeah, there was this whole, like, welfare program started for them, and it was in New York City. But it probably, as usual in American society and culture and government, like, that help probably stopped. That aid didn't continue for many years, and maybe they were forgotten again and thrown away. You know, they did this for maybe publicity for the 20, you know, homeless people they found, and then they gave them homes. But that's a very real thing that was happening in the 80s, and I think that's really cool, is to, like, take a fear of the other, and not even the other, it's still you, but a different version of you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really important comment that's made. Like, they're like, you know, we're just like you, we're human beings too, And that's a running theme, and it's very, very important to pay attention to that.
Yeah, and I thought there were so many things, like, there were so many hints to let you know that she was the other, but, I mean, people noticed it immediately in the trailer. People were like, why is Lupita snapping off Beat? Like, I know y'all ain't gonna let her be snapping off. Like,
everybody thought it was about race, right? Like, Jordan Peele was very much like, oh, it's not about race, but everybody thought it was gonna be about race, like, this movie. So they thought, like, it was gonna be about being whitewashed. And honestly, there's a little bit of that in there.
Ooh, I want to hear that hot take then.
You want to hear that?
Yeah, okay, what do you mean?
So
yeah.
I'll kind of start from the beginning here. So basically, there, to me, the parents in particular, like, there's an added layer of critique on society here. Like, the family in general, they're like working class people who have risen in rank. They've gone up. They've already gone from down here to up there, right? Like, they're already living in more of an upper. They have this, like, vacation house. They, like, you know, they college educated, all these other things that are supposed to make you better in society, allegedly. So basically, their representative, specifically Adelaide, who's Lupita Nyong'o's character, their imposter syndrome, like, literally, like, and whitewashing is or their vocabulary or their way that they, things that they do, like, that's how it was represented, like, visually and otherwise. So to me, like, it's all about imposter syndrome. Like, with Gabe, it's not very obvious. Like, it's in the details. It's how he wears his Howard sweater all the time because he wants to prove that he's, like, rooted in the Black community and the culture. But the whole time, he's just thinking about, like, how all the perks that come with being white and wealthy, right? Like, he's just, like, he wants the Tyler family's car and their boat. And even after, like, they've gone through all this crazy fucking shit that we'll get into, he's, like, super, like, he kind of makes a face like he's kind of pleased that he gets to take the Range Rover or Land Rover or whatever.
No, I feel that too, but my only hot take is that Lupita was not poor because that was her mother's house, and I was like, that's your mama's house. Your mama's house is big,
right? Like, it's, I'm not saying, like, house. Literally, they, like, they themselves were,
oh no, she is the imposter, because yeah,
they represent in general, like, having risen up in the ranks, and the imposter syndrome, like, is the most obvious with Adelaide. Like, it's so fucking, actually, it's obvious at the end. It's not obvious until the end for
yeah, those who that, that's take a while what we're to, dealing with is imposter yeah. syndrome, because at first you're just kind of like, well, she's already yeah. like made it in society, exactly. and she's used to dance ballet, and then she stopped. So it was like, there, obviously there's a lot of access that she's had, and yeah. she's made the most of it, you know. And the same with Winston Duke's character, you know, he's wearing his. And another thing I found interesting was that, like, and I get what you're saying now, and I'm seeing it now because you talk about how he was kind of obsessed with his place in society, because he also even mentioned calling the cops, which is a thing that, like, any, like, Black person yeah. or POC person doesn't necessarily even kind of go to do,
even though Lupita was the one that kind of pushed it, right?
Yeah, like, but even then it's like, wait, we don't call cops, we just get in the car and go. Or, like, shoot. But, like, there were no guns in this movie, which I thought was another really cool thing. There was not a gun. Like, everybody was just yeah. stabbing people with, like, scissors and shit. Like, it was all physical. Right. It was no carnage. Guns, which is maybe a little bit too real, you know? Like, oof, yeah. And where were they? The state of California? Like, I don't know if it would have gone down this way in the state of Texas. Like, I don't know if it could have been a worldwide event.
Yeah, it was event. Santa Cruz, so...
And maybe yeah. only in California could the tethered really done all that, because in the state of Texas, I don't think anybody would have been untethered. Let's just keep it real.
Right. To me, having been here a year and some change, I was like, yeah, all this shit makes sense, yeah.
In
being
the state right of California.
Absolutely. Because well, not even in the state of California, being on the coast in California. Like,
gotcha. Oh, yeah, because once you get into rural Cali, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, there are still some very fucked up places here.
Yeah, that's why I was like, I don't know how, like, worldwide this, like, US movement can go in the United States.
How it translates or whatever.
Yeah, because I was like, not in the state of Texas, boo. Not here. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Not yeah. happening. People just ready to shoot when they hear a noise in the state of Texas. So, not happening here for the tethered are not untethered here. But I thought that was cool. I thought it was a cool concept. And I thought that was a very liberal idea of how, like, the tethered could rise up against the untethered, because I feel like he was making an assumption that the oppressed, I mean not the oppressed, that the haves of this society weren't
the privilege
of the society weren't ready to like break
that. They're like the marginalized. They're fighting it, right? The whole time they're like physically fighting it, even though like the tethered can very easily overtook them, like at the end of the day, everyone except for Adelaide's family, and it was just because Adelaide was one of them. So that's
correct. Yeah,
that's another thing that to me represents the imposter syndrome. So it's like she herself, like there's a moment after they come back from the beach that she's staring like in the window at herself, and she's like has this monologue where she tells Gabe about her doppelganger and how she met her, and she's telling the story that the doppelganger actually experience, but she's telling it as if it was her. And to me, the moment read as like a successful person who's admitting that they fear that like their background is one day going to be their demise, or they're going to be caught pretending to be someone they're not. And that's the imposter, that's what imposter syndrome feels like, right? Like that one day somebody's going to look at you and be like, you don't belong here.
And that's real.
So to me it was super real. Yeah, like trying to get out from what you think you're worth, and it's at the end of the day it's bullshit.
I feel like that was a really interesting scene, just because like when you're watching it, I mean, you don't even think anything of it. And this is the genius again of Jordan Peele, is that like she comes back, she doesn't speak, and you think, oh, maybe she's just traumatized because she saw herself.
You think she's traumatized,
you right. think, but that
it's, yeah, but her voice happening. Her voice, like her having a voice and not having a voice, that's the dead giveaway, right? Because she doesn't talk when she comes back, but her doppelganger, the one in the red jumpsuit, does talk, and she's the only tethered that can talk. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy. Like, so you're just like the whole time, you're like, when you rewatch it, you're like, okay, it was there the whole time. So that's pretty awesome. But the whole thing, you know, it's a critique on also Americans on the surface as well, like the Tyler family. Like that's when it really sinks in that the movie isn't really about race.
No,
right? Because
no,
you
definitely about
the whole time. Yeah, you think it's about this family, this black family, and that's the point of it, and that's why they have the tethered. But no, like everyone has a tethered. Everyone has the same family. So when you see the white family, the Tyler family, get killed by their people, you're like, what the fuck?
This
like,
isn't about just one family.
This is not exactly. This is about more than them. And like, yeah, it just kind of settles in even more how easily they kill them, how like fucking easy it is for them to die. It settles in that like there's something different about Adelaide.
Yeah, and I mean, you kind of see it when she goes back to kill one of the twins, one of the tethered twins. She kind of makes that weird little grunt noise, and I was like, huh, maybe she just was like putting more effort into that. But then I was like, why would he put that there for me to see it? Like, why would it be so obvious? Like, Jordan Peele's trying to tell me something.
Yeah, and it's also like, I think it can also be misleading, because you would think that he's trying to say like, oh, we're just like the tethered, we also have a dark side to us. But then it's like, no, it's like she is a tethered, she's the imposter, she's the body snatcher.
I love this movie. My one critique is that like people figured it out really quick.
I saw your tweet about how you didn't figure it out for a little bit.
No, I'm part of the percentage that was like, ooh, I figured it out 2 minutes before he told me, therefore I figured it out, and then I felt real dumb because my girlfriend was like, I figured it like 15 minutes in. I was like,
okay. That's pretty impressive for me. I was 100% convinced when she knew exactly where to go in the funhouse thingy or whatever the fuck it was.
I think
like
that's
she was
when...
like, she immediately knew like this is the entrance to the thing, like and there's no way she would have known.
That's
that.
Pretty deep in. Maybe it wasn't 2 minutes before. It was when maybe that started happening. I was like, wait a minute.
It was like
what?
Maybe it was something like 20 minutes ahead that I was 100% sure. I already suspected it before.
Oh, I wasn't. Like, I was starting to suspect when she did that.
Oh, really? No, at that point I was like, she's definitely it, because how the fuck did she know how to go get down there? Like, mother's intuition isn't that strong.
Yeah. That's when I was like, I think it might be her. You know, I was like, I have a feeling, I have a suspicion that she knows something she doesn't. And I'm like, yeah, duh. Like, bitch, you're stupid. Like, I figured it out super late.
God. Can we talk a little bit about, like, some of the other, like, about the Tyler family specifically and some of the other things that were critiques on Americans and, like,
Dude.
Their wealthiness and shit?
Dude, like, that whole scene when she was getting killed, I think it was Elizabeth Moss's character was getting killed, and mm-hmm. she was like, Alexa, we know it's not Alexa, it's a different name, Ophelia, call the cops.
Something like that.
Something like Ophelia, call the cops, and then it's like, oh, you want to play fuck the police?
Yeah. Oh, call the police, yeah. And she's like, they're like, fuck the police. And then the first line,
fuck the police.
And the first line in that song, did you notice like what that was?
No, what is it?
It's fuck the police coming straight from underground or whatever.
Oh,
it is.
Coming straight so from it's the like underground.
Straight
yeah.
from the underground. Yeah,
they like, literally came from the underground.
That was on fucking purpose. Oh yeah, that was some good. The soundtrack in this movie, we can talk. I'm sure that you have some comments to make on that.
Oh yeah, okay. So,
but before that,
we need to stick on them. So, and then another thing about her, Elizabeth Moss is tethered. The scars on her face, like Elizabeth Moss's character was like on the beach chilling with Lupita's character, and she was like, you know, I had some work done. And she's like, where? How? Like, what? I don't even see this shit. And then you see the tethered, and you're like, oh, we know where you got your work done, girl. Right up in that face. Like, and.
Well, she starts cutting herself with the scissors because she wants to make herself. She wants to do what her untethered version of herself did. So she starts cutting. She's like, and she puts on lipstick. She's all bloodied up and beat up, and she starts putting on like this lipstick.
Yeah, that's
because
like,
she wants to be
beautiful. Like,
she wants to be an American.
She wants to be an American. She wants to have access. She wants to have the privilege to get, you know, plastic surgery. She wants to have the privilege to wear makeup and laugh and be happy. Because even she was like fake laughing.
She smiles and all that shit.
And then you didn't hear anything. And then I was like, why is she not making any? No, is it like, am I, did he, what?
Because they don't talk.
They don't really talk. They don't know how to speak. And I was just like, oh, word. I get it. Like, this is definitely just her saying, like, this is what it means to be like, have that position in class. Because
that's what they're all doing. All the tethered are coming up and they're wanting to be American. That's why they're holding hands across America.
And then like and then the husband puts on that fucking robe, like,
yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was gonna say, dude. Nice. Because he's an obnoxious fucking American dude, and he goes to his boat and he's like being showing offy, and he like everything that he does.
What was the name of the boat? It was so stupid.
Yeah, I remember it saying something. I can't remember what it says.
Oh, yeah, a biatch. Biatch.
Yacht. Yeah, biatch. And then, but the yacht is with it says yacht on it.
Yeah, it says yacht.
Yeah.
Biatch.
That's stupid. Yacht.
It's this most obnoxious, like, American, like, also, like, stealing culture vulture bullshit as well. Because it's like, biatch? Like, really, bro? That's what you named your boat. Like, you're such a fucking douchebag. And then I love that he kills him with the that he shoots off that flare.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything.
Oh God. Oh, but anyways, like that access, they had that Range Rover, had the nice house, they had supposedly the security, and they had all this extra stuff, and yet all of that extra stuff, all of that did nothing. They all got fucking killed by like scissors
immediately. Yeah. God, that was quite a scene. Like, I know it's supposed to be a horror film, but the whole time I was like cackling.
Like, that's a badass scene.
Yeah. And as we talked about in Get Out, like, Jordan Peele is really great about symbolism, right? So in this movie, it's all about doubling. Like, everything is doubled, even the beginning and the end, right? So it starts with a commercial or a PSA about hands across America, and then that's followed by a trip to Santa Cruz Beach. And then it's flipped and doubled at the end because it ends with them and their final showdown at Santa Cruz Beach. And then at the very end is them literally being hands across America. So the end and the beginning are doubles of themselves or inversions of themselves. And the most obvious double is the people. So it's like the red jumpsuit Latin tethered and the human beings that are up above ground. So it's like everything is doubled all throughout the film, and that's where you see the spider and you see the shadow, and then when they're walking across the beach, it's like this shot from above where their shadows are there.
Mm-hmm.
And the story that the tethered Adelaide says about her being forced to live this life or whatever and to experience everything that Adelaide experiences.
I guess my questions and my confusion come from like, okay, but what was like the revolution supposed to do? Like, after you killed all your tethered, like what you're gonna do?
I think
what was the idea of freedom was my question. Like, what was their true idea of freedom? Was their idea of freedom to live the lives that they were told they weren't supposed to live, or what the fuck? Like, that's where I was like, okay, this is cute, but like, what is their idea of freedom other than killing the people that they didn't even know they were, that they were tethered to them? You know, it's like, who are we mad at? Are we mad at the people that get to live the lives that we want? Or are we mad at the, like, government and society? Shouldn't we be throwing that over versus, you know, the people who didn't even know they were tethered to us? Like, is it their fault? Like, they live their lives in privilege. Like, what if our tethered wasn't privilege? What if our tethered was in prison, like you were saying? Or what if our tethered live in the hood? Like, what was the point? What was your idea of freedom? It's assuming that everyone on land is free, that everyone on above and experiencing American society is experiencing freedom. And that's just like not a real thing. Like, not all of us out here living that, those modes of middle class, like, suburban life. Like, if you go to the hood, the tethered would die. Like, that would, they would not be untethered, right? Like, everybody got guns in the hood. I hear them go off. I used to hear them go off every weekend. So no, they would not want that life. Like, do you want to go live in underground versus living up above? You're still in poverty though. So like, what's goody, you know?
Right. So I mean, I think the important thing to know is that this isn't about the, you know, people who are marginalized at the end of it. It's about the people who are privileged. It's about them and their anxieties of the those others rising up. And the ending where Adelaide has won, you know, basically evil has won at that point, is very telling, because it's like, what are we really doing here, right? Like, what, like, at the whole world is probably fucking over. Like, you know, we're bad people. Like, that's what it basically is saying. It's like, fuck, like, you're fighting this whole fight, and at the end of it, there's supposed to be this good guy, but there's not. Americans are not the good guy here.
It's like, and but neither are the tethered to become untethered. No, they're not good either. But it's like,
that's a tethered.
But they said it was like a government experiment. So it's like, why not go after the government versus the people who didn't even know they were tethered to you, boo? Like, you mad at them, but they didn't really do nothing to you. You just mad. You's a hater, basically, right? Like, you just a hater. Yeah. You killing somebody who gets to breathe air and not just eat raw rabbit all the time. I get that. But at the same time, it's like, okay, Jordan Peele, I get what you're saying. I get it. It's cute. It works in a small place like Santa Cruz only. Nowhere else.
Like, yeah, I think if you try to like logic the shit out of it, it falls apart.
Yeah,
I think like for sure, like you can't do that to this particular movie. You can't do that to a lot of horror movies because it's
they're all ridiculous, right? Like,
right,
and like novellas, it don't make no sense. But like, that's the good part.
And it's also probably why it was set in only one location. It's why you didn't go and see other places of the world, because this is very much to do with Santa Cruz and that specific location. So I also think that this whole thing is meant to be in the eyes and in the fears of the privileged. So they're not going to give substance to the tethered. Mm-hmm. They're not going to give substance to the marginalized community because they don't see them that way.
They don't see them as.
And that's why, right, as human beings. And that's the whole point of the movie, right? Like, we're human too, but
it's the fear.
They don't see them that way. Mm-hmm. They see them as monsters.
It's the fear. And it's the xenophobia of, like, the other, you know? And that's exactly all. The fear of the unknown.
So that's why it's just, I don't know. I think, to me, another message that I kind of wrote about a little bit was I'll probably fucking just read it verbatim how I ended my article. It's like, ultimately, society in the U.S., it fears that the luxuries that come with being an American will be taken away if they allow the masses to rise up. And perhaps there's another layer of anxiety below the materialistic one that addresses the guilt that Americans feel about their position of privilege in the world. Like, it's just
word snap. Agree.
So that's kind of what I got out of it. Yeah. So also, I just think that it's not about the marginalized in this thing, other than Adelaide, because she comes up and you see her story, and she ends up becoming exactly the people who are oppressing the tethered. You know.
I feel you. That's snaps. That was really good. That's exactly how I see us. And although my hot take is more like Simpsons related, like legit, like, bro,
I want to hear about that because it's fun.
Okay, so Jordan Peele literally just stole the plot to like the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror, where Bart finds his good twin.
Matt Groening's coming after you.
Look, Matt Groening should be going after Jordan Peele, okay? He ain't got nothing to do with me.
But don't fucking do that.
Don't do that. I'll fight. Just work together. Just like Jordan Peele should produce an episode of The Simpsons and let's see where it goes, because legit, The Simpsons did it first. And I like The Simpsons. They didn't do it exactly the same. Of course, Jordan Peele has a lot of original ideas. I'm just talking shit, okay? But anyways, Treehouse of Horror, dude. Bart finds his other living in his fucking attic, eating fucking bunny rabbits raw too.
Wild.
And he's like, and at the end you find out that Bart was the evil twin that made it out, and he's the one that stuffed his good twin in the fucking like attic, even though he's like the weird gross one that comes down looking torn and shabby. He's the good twin, and that's the only thing that kept reminding me of this, like when I saw it.
Holy,
I was like,
shit.
Word, this is exactly the episode of The Simpsons. Like, it's not even the monkey paw thing. I'm like, he's been making Simpsons references for a minute and I haven't seen it. Word, shout out to like Jordan Peele being a Simpsons fan.
That's interesting.
I think it was a direct inspiration of that Treehouse of Horror film. His Monkey Paw production company, that was that episode of The Simpsons where Homer got the monkey paw and made three stupid wishes. And I was like, bro, come on. You've been directly inspired. Yeah. It's okay to say you're inspired because, you know, you didn't copy, because it's not anything similar.
It's not exact.
But
at all,
yo, right? that twist that The Simpsons pulled,
the
same
twist,
shit.
I will say, very Simpsons. It's kind of undeniable.
Very Simpsons.
Let's talk about the soundtrack. I want to hear your hot take on the soundtrack.
Shout out to this fucking soundtrack. I didn't think I'd be bopping the whole time. Like, Luna's, when I heard Luna's got five on it, I was like,
oh, my fucking God.
Oh, shit. So, like, he's, like, directly played, he's making this for people in the hood. Like, he let you know early on that, like, this is for us. He's like,
for us,
yeah, right. And then what was the fuck the police, like every bit of music in this movie was like lit because it was about like reclaiming this music and putting it on this big screen. I felt so validated watching and hearing like old school hip-hop in this,
right? The like, transformation of I Got Five on it, because he uses it, obviously he like he plays the original track and then he does like a sort of amplified horror track of it, and then he like strips it and then makes it into like the your traditional da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Like he strips it and even it has that inspiration for that part of the soundtrack towards the end. Like he fucking recycles that shit, uses it, you know, like God. And there was so much in that. I loved it.
No, there's, I mean, and the fact that like I can't ever hear that song again the same.
Yeah.
Like, every time I hear that song, I'm gonna be like, yeah, I just, underground, bro. Like, we going underground. Mm-hmm. There's another thing I found, like, very smart of him was that initially, when Adelaide goes into the funhouse, it's, like, a Native American-themed funhouse, and it was, like, a spirit journey, come find yourself. And then, like, right. He's really, really smart. Like, redone in 2019 when he filmed it, it was a wizard's,
to be more politically correct,
yeah, it was like a wizard's for some bullshit. And I was like, oh word,
there's
like
a lot of Native American, there's a whole article, I'm sure you probably read it, yeah. And I would we don't have time to probably like go into the details of it, no. But go read that article, it's all over this film. And I feel like it was a very important thing for them to have in this movie, because nothing's more American than screwing over Native Americans,
taking all of their motherfucking land and secluding them to these areas. There's a lot there, and someone did it way better than us. Go read that article, y'all.
Yeah, go read that article. We have gone super long on this episode. So.
Oh yeah, it was good.
There's some great hot takes. Honestly,
we're
like
gonna miss a bunch.
Every article that we use for reference in this, I will go ahead and try to link that on cabronadechingonas.com. We'll link my article that's specifically just about imposter syndrome on there, and yeah, just there's so much to this. I love this movie. I love watching it again. I love the soundtrack.
And please watch it in a movie theater full of POC people, black people preferably.
It's definitely out of theater by now.
Oh well, go watch it with your black people friends, because
buy it,
don't watch
just
it with white
it
people.
On the buy it to stream, buy a physical copy, get the bonus scenes. Actually, I can't wait to see some bonus scenes on this shit. I bet that they're fucking wild.
I can't wait
to. And shout out to Lupita Nyong'o, like just the best fucking actress in the whole fucking world. I had a mini argument with a white person about,
of course,
she's,
of course.
He's like, Elizabeth Moss probably got paid more than Lupita because she won an Emmy. I was like, Lupita won a fucking
Oscar.
Oscar,
bro.
What the fuck is absolutely? Oh, she's like, I don't know anything about Lupita. I'm like, that's because you're a fucking
stop
idiot.
Stop talking.
So
yeah,
let's
move
on.
Don't talk about things you don't know. Like, if you don't know
exactly,
about Lupita,
I know that as a white man, you think that you can talk about anything and everything and win, but fuck off.
You have to have some kind of fact, bro, before you start talking about Lupita. Yeah, like, don't come for us. Mouth. Like, we love Lupita. Everybody claim her. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Oh my god, her acting in this. Ugh, like, 10 mm-hmm. panduces for her acting, because I was like, word, bitch, I really did think it was two people, and like, ah, she's so good. It was so, like, I only got it, like, 20 minutes before everybody else did, and yeah. I was like, oh, wow, okay, and then,
like, stupid. You know, do your research on, like, there were some controversies about her inspirations behind how she talked and acted. There's some controversies there. Do your own research on that. I would rather not comment on it. I'm not super informed on it right now.
Yeah, I mean, okay, come after Adam Sandler, then. Like, his entire career, boo.
Right, everybody's like, saying that. Shut the fuck up. Like, it's just, like... And I'm not going to be the one that's going to be like, oh, you know, like, excusing everything just for whatever reason. But I'm also, like, not, I just don't think that she's not hurting people. Like, I feel.
No, it's white people just being mad about something because the black woman's doing it. That's it. You know probably, why. You know why, girl. Because, you know, like, let a white man do it.
Correct me if I'm wrong, right?
Oh, like, it's his art. And it's his, like, duh, it is. He's an actor. Like, people act. Yeah. I don't understand. It's not, you know, there's good representation and bad representation. Like, I don't think that was bad, because if you're respectful, if you're thoughtful, if you're careful, if you don't do things out of spite or hate or any kind of, like,
malice. And she's still out here apologizing. So I'm really like, can y'all stop?
She already apologized. Calm down. Yeah, she did. And I don't think she necessarily should have. But shout out to her for doing the right thing, which is apologizing. If you hurt people, you apologize. You don't get the right to say you didn't hurt them. But... you move on from that.
Yeah, it's just like nowhere near what other people are doing. Like, this is, you know, like, she's supposed to represent a person that hasn't had anybody to talk to in a bajillion years. Like, of course she's gonna have a funny voice.
Yeah, I whatever, it's just because the black one's doing it, that's why they're upset.
Basically,
but, you know, they can suck a dick.
Our hot take. So
yes, okay
yeah. Wow. No cafecitos. Love this movie.
Five panduces. I want to see it like three more times. I really loved it. Everyone else did.
The second viewing, I sound like a fucking ridiculous Californian right now, but the second viewing was absolutely phenomenal.
Really?
And I love it.
Why is that a Californian thing?
I don't know. I was having this conversation with one of my coworkers, and we were like, yeah, upon second viewing, you know, like, just like the terminology I think that we were using, or I don't know what it was.
Y'all watch movies like two times in theaters, like in a week or so?
Sometimes. Well, it was mostly just because it was like we were having the conversation, period, and it sounded really pretentious the way we were talking about it. So I got called out for sounding really Californian, and I'm like, okay, I'm a Texan, first of all.
We don't watch movies.
We only watch movies once.
With cowboys and guns.
But anyways, yeah, fantastic movies. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter, CYC Podcast, on Facebook at CYC Pod. Give us some ratings and some reviews. We finally passed 100 reviews, and that made me really happy. And we finally passed 100,000 listens. Oh, so that's really nice.
We out here. Let's end it there. I got so much shit to clean and to iron, and I gotta go be a boring housewife.
I gotta go find a job. So
yes. Hey guys, if you know one,
hit up. Hopefully by this time, I already have one, so I don't know.
Yes, we'll I believe you will.
All right, fingers crossed. Positive thinking. Guys, thank you for listening.
Bye, guys.
I'm at MYT Pen on Twitter, and bye.
And I'm at Fried Bobby though. Bye.